GCR Digital Radio. It's Lindsay here. Get in touch with us, gcrlocalnews@gmail.com. We're on Facebook. We are on Twitter too. Now, the general election, GE 2020, as it's trending on Twitter, was called last Tuesday. Carl Dieter from yes.ie joins me. Carl, you're very welcome. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks. Hope you're having a good weekend.
I am. So far, so good. And great to have you back on the airwaves with me. It's been a little while since we chatted, I suppose.
It's been too long, I would describe it as.
What is yes.ie?
Yes.ie is it's basically online mortgages. So if someone wanted to get a loan in the past, you might have to walk into a bank or a brokerage. At yes.ie, you can do everything over your mobile phone.
Oh, fantastic. How does it work exactly? I know it's over your mobile phone.
Well, you basically, you fill in your information and then you use your phone to upload all your documentation instead of having to scan it and email it or post it off to someone. It's just all done right there and then, including things like your anti-money laundering checks and various other checks that you have to do, which in the past were very manually intensive. So we turned that all into kind of robotics and digital machine reading, which in short means that you can get an approval for a loan in about 7 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Which in the past used to take a long, much longer than that. So we're just using technology in the way it's meant to be used to make people's life better, easier, faster, you know, improving things for everybody.
Yeah, and online, everything is going online these days. Now, in my intro there, I spoke about the general election, which was called last Tuesday. It's going to be held on Saturday, the 8th of February. So, what are we going to do about the homeless situation? Because I know with yes.ie, people can go in there and look for mortgage approval, but there is a much wider picture that we're looking at here because, you know, I don't think it's been addressed as it should be.
Yeah, well, I suppose when people are facing into homelessness, like they wouldn't be the people, for instance, who would be getting mortgages. And most of them are coming from the private rented sector. In other words, they were renting a house and then they lose an income, relationships break down. You know, people sometimes think that, oh, the rent got so high. But if your rent goes up by, say, 4% or something like that, that's typically not going to drive you into homelessness. It's a host of other factors, job loss, things like this. I suppose that we're just not as strong as perhaps we could be in terms of making renting more viable for people, in particular where they might not be people who will ever really own a home. And so we need to increase certain types of housing. Could do with some more social housing, but could also do with really looking again at the way that we organize, for instance, leases. Because at the moment, if you're in a lease, you can be asked to leave if the landlord wants the property back to sell or to give to a relative or to live in themselves. In the 1870s, I'm going back a little ways here now, but in the 1870s, they actually fixed all of this by having rules for fixity of tenure, free sale, you know, fair rent. The fixity of tenure meant that if you signed a 10-year lease, as long as you kept paying the lease, you could never be asked to leave. And those laws still apply today, but people don't sign 10-year leases. So I think we need to also have a rethink, instead of looking for new innovative solutions, is to look at some of the old, very well-working solutions that we don't use anymore. And that's usually not politically a popular thing to discuss because it doesn't involve any, you know, savior coming down from on high. It just involves a shift of the way that we think about something back to the old way that really worked well for people. And that actually would have helped to avoid a lot of these problems had we done it in the past. But we stopped. We started using one-year leases and basing tenancy around what I would describe as a Tinder-style relationship, but expecting marriage-style commitments from it. And that was a mistake.
In the UK, I know that in some areas, I'm not 100% sure on how it works, but they have 99-year leases in some instances. And that would mean one generation can hand over their property to the next generation, but they can never be made homeless, providing, of course, like you said, they continue to pay their lease. I think there is another kind of situation like that in Germany as well, where people tend to rent more than buy more. Why are we so, I suppose, stuck in the fact that we need to own our own home?
Well, a lot of nations are stuck in the fact of wanting to own their own home. And Ireland isn't the worst at it, you know. Other countries have far higher rates of home ownership than we do, say, Bulgaria, Romania, lots of different places. And it comes from a tradition of wanting to have at least one physical stake or one asset or store of wealth which you could utilize by living in and that you could also have as your own and pass on to other generations. It is the main form of wealth in the world. If you were to take all the billionaires and all everything else, and as much as you hear about, you know, the rich being rich, the rump of all world wealth is far outweighed in personal property, immovable property, as in housing assets, than all other markets combined. It's the biggest. And the thing that you spoke about, just to mention on the leases, I did a study before in Dublin looking at house prices going from back in the early 1700s until modern times. You couldn't buy a house in Dublin in the 1700s. Very few people owned a house. Very few people ever took out mortgages. They were completely unheard of. Everybody was on leases. They were all in these long-term leases, which is where you get these expressions like a sugarloaf rent or a peppercorn rent. That comes from that old 1700s style language. But what it meant was that people could use leases intergenerationally. Sometimes they were for 30 years, or they would be a lease for two people and their child, to where the child actually took that lease on if they stayed in the house. And that gave people a real sense of ongoing security within the property, where they knew that they could stay there as long as they lived. Again, as long as they also paid the rent. Mm. And to an extent, it also helps to keep prices in check somewhat, because what happens is, when rents rise, property prices rise. You have to remember, landlords are actually price takers. They don't set prices. So when you see rents rising, if every time that someone moves, it gets more and more expensive, then the more people move, the more expensive it gets. And as you have an economy where people are looking to come into the country, where their businesses are locating here because of Brexit and things like that, it actually creates this self-reinforcing cycle that is pushing prices up. As well as that, central banks have a lot to answer for, because they've made interest rates so cheap that, you know, getting a 2% return on a property is better than getting the below zero rates that they are creating in the markets. And that means that money rushes into things like housing, while at the same time growing populations and cities increase the price of housing. Things like Brexit are pushing more people into Ireland, for instance, increase the price of housing. So you've got all these different forces at play. And getting over them or getting through them can sometimes be confounding, while at the same time, you've got all these newcomers who need housing. And the insiders, the people who are already housed, are usually doing their utmost best to keep everybody out. And you see that everywhere. Ruth Coppinger, TD for People Before Profit recently, was really upset about this co-living project that got the go-ahead in Castle Knockout. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I was thinking to myself, like, this is housing. You know, if you can put a roof over 210 people's head, that's a good thing. It's a few minutes walk from a train station. But she says, no, I don't like the idea of co-living housing. It should be social housing. It should be something else. And quite often people frame their objections by saying, well, I'm not against housing. I'm against that particular project. But when you become against particular projects, you become against housing in general. Because if everyone everywhere acts that way, and someone locally says that they believe it should be done some other way, and they slow a project down and add years on to its delivery, that comes at a huge societal cost. And again, you see politicians doing it. Leo Varadkar, the leader of the country, he does it. You know, I made a list at one stage of all the politicians who would try to stop housing from going ahead. It's pretty impressive. You know, they all do it. And it leads to delays, and it leads to a shortage of housing.
Well, I mean, I know that they say the house prices have stabilized according to recent reports that have come out in the press and stuff like that. I don't know how true that actually is. I'm wondering more or less, where are the houses? Because as you say, the politicians are voting down the fact that contractors want to go in there and build houses. So where are the houses for people to express an interest in, maybe eventually look for a mortgage, maybe start renting, and then maybe eventually might be in a position to buy the house should it come up for sale?
Yeah, well, the housing is starting to get built. Like, a lot of official statistics talk about 30,000, you know, new homes needed a year, and we're not even going to hit 20,000 probably, you know, last year. So we're constantly playing catch up on ourselves. The downside of that is eventually that machine does start to produce, and it plays catch up and then overshoots as well. And that leads to downturns, which is what we've seen in the past in property cycles in Ireland. Interestingly, Davy came out the other day and said that they expect property prices to start rising again after next year, now that the specter of a no deal Brexit is gone. And if you were to see that happen, it would show that stability and Irish housing really never belong in the same sentence as one another. Because we actually lack the policies required to get stability. And this is the frustration, is that the way you get stability is you start to increase property tax by a good bit. And you need to lower income tax at the same time, otherwise it's completely unfair. But you need to increase property taxes, make sure everybody is paying, and that part of that is used to help create new housing. And if you were to do that, then we would constantly have a supply of housing being built, either by the state or by people, etc. Whereas at the moment, what you've got is a kind of a boom-bust cycle where you're either making loads of money or you're losing your, you know, losing your shirt.
Yeah, it seems to be that we tend to go in swings and roundabouts. Where the boom is back, and they reckon that, you know, everything is all good and everyone's all happy. And there's certain aspects of community life and people outside of the main outside of Dublin, you know, where they have not seen any kind of a recovery whatsoever.
Yeah, I kind of don't buy that line entirely, because even in places like Longford, in the Midlands, you would have seen houses selling for, say, 28,000. They're now selling for 100,000. Mm. So they would have trebled from the very low end, but they're certainly nowhere near what they were selling for, say, in 2005. So what you've seen is this like sort of 15-year process where they're still, you know, 40-50% below what they had initially sold for. That doesn't mean that the recovery hasn't happened, because the recovery doesn't happen from the top to the bottom back up. The recovery is from the bottom up. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying.
In a good sense, for people who did buy houses for, you know, 35,000-40,000 when those houses were available, they are now going on to lead, you know, wonderful lives, because they've got very low overheads. They could work in a lower paid job or work fewer hours and spend more time with their family and still have, you know, their wealth built up and their house asset there. It's a massive opportunity. But at the same time, what we saw was that people who were losing jobs going down, maybe even losing homes going down, they never got a chance to get in on that. And now as they're recovering, they're facing into a market which is incredibly expensive. So there are certain generations which just seem to just get kicked in the teeth again and again and again. And it must get really exasperating for them. And I think that to an extent that you're going to see them start to express that frustration at the polls. And I think, you know, given that we're talking about elections and housing together, I think that whoever really comes up with the best innovative solutions for housing in the run-up to this will actually see a benefit of those policies if they're well thought out, and not just more of the same of, oh, we need more money, or, you know, the kind of nonsensical stuff that everyone asks for.
Well, they'd want to kind of be thinking on their feet fairly fast, because February the 8th is only around the corner, really, in terms of elections and stuff like that.
It is. But, you know, don't forget that there's still a huge amount of public information that can occur in a short amount of time. Mm. I mean, you know, when we saw the Iranians attack the U.S. embassy and the U.S. then kill one of their generals, there was only hours, and that news was all over the world. Well, I'm not saying that this is as significant or the same thing, but good information spreads fast. And I think that's the job of the politicians, to do their debates on radio, television. I'm sure you'll have a few people on your show as well doing this kind of thing to brighten up everyone's Sunday morning.
But will they brighten it up, though? That's the thing.
Well, they might put the dark cloud to your silver lining. But you know, that's part of the political process. I do think that headway has been made. It's slow, it's frustrating, it's not as quick as anyone would hope, least of all the politicians, who would love to see something wonderful occurring and be able to take the claim of victory from it. But look, the way we've been doing things, you know, does it work? The fact that it exists, yes, it does. Does it work as well as it could for all people involved? The answer is probably no. And the solution to that, I think, actually lies more within Irish society than within just the politicians alone. We have to get out of a culture of objecting to everything, of saying not in my backyard, and start to say yes in my backyard.
Carl Dieter from yes.ie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
GCR Digital Radio, let's get back to more of your kind of music.